This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Gladyszewski.
Hello, this is the Inch Podcast, our annual Selection Sunday Inch Podcast. Thanks for joining us. This podcast is recorded March 20th, 2011. My name is Joe Gladyszewski. We've got the Famous Four here on board for our Selection Sunday thoughts and meanderings. Pleased to welcome to the podcast Inch editor Mike Eidelbus. Hello, Bus.
Greetings, everyone. How goes it?
Goes well for me. How goes it for you?
That's barely going, but that's that time of year, so.
We'll battle. We will
battle. we'll grind her out.
We will. Speaking of grinding her out, Jess Myers saw a game last night where that happened. WCHA senior writer, double overtime Final Five game. How are you, Jess, and how was your weekend?
I'm exhausted, but it's the most wonderful time of the year. I mean that quite sincerely. I mean, this is as good as it gets, so. It's a good kind of tired.
Good deal. And also CCHA senior writer, James V. Dowd. Hello, James.
Good evening, Gladdy.
How are you?
I'm good. I fully enjoyed my weekend at the CCHA championship.
Yeah, congrats on a bunch of good games there.
Yeah, it was really, really entertaining all the way through, even though the score, the actual ending scores might not show it, but the games themselves were really entertaining.
All right. Here's what we've got on tap for this podcast. We're going to go through the NCAA tournament region by region. I'll start with a quick look at the bracket here. And this is also the order that we'll go in. Starting in the West region, Boston College is the number one seed. Colorado College is the fourth seed. They will play in the first round. The other game in that region is Michigan and Nebraska-Omaha. That's in St. Louis, Missouri. In the Midwest Regional, that's in Green Bay, Wisconsin, first-round games are North Dakota versus Rensselaer and Denver versus Western Michigan. Taking it toward the east, Bridgeport, Connecticut hosts a group with Yale, the tournament's number one overall seed. Their first-round opponent will be Air Force, and the other East Regional semifinal is Union versus Minnesota Duluth. And then wrapping things up in Manchester, New Hampshire, Miami versus UNH, and that's a first-round game, as well as Merrimack versus Notre Dame. Let's start with discussion in the West region, St. Louis, Missouri.
Dreams are forged. Character is tested. Teams are united. Champions win here. The road to the championship continues. Don't miss the 2011 NCAA Division I Men's Ice Hockey West Regional, March 25th and 26th. Hosted by the Central Collegiate Hockey Association at the Scott Trade Center in St. Louis. For information, visit ncaa.com/tickets.
Okay, a fitting place to start our conversation, as this regional is where the defending national champions will compete. That's Boston College. It's been a tough go of teams even getting into the national tournament after they have won the previous year's title. Yeah, that's obviously circumstantial and coincidental, but this BC team is doing it again. They've won a bunch of games here in the second half, playing great hockey right now, and pretty solid team as they go. James, you got Michigan in this group. Before we started recording, you thought BC was a pretty clear favorite out of this group.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan certainly, you know, looking up and down the roster, I think Michigan and Colorado College both have some players that can compete with BC, but BC's just been playing, I think, better than Michigan in recent weeks. Had a chance to watch Michigan play twice this weekend, and, they lost David Wahlberg for the year, who he doesn't have huge numbers, but he's kind of that second-tier forward that they can rely on. And I think that, without him, they didn't have the guys from the third and fourth lines that moved up or were, you would hope, that would step up. They just didn't do that this weekend. And with Brandon Berlon questionable, I just don't think that they're going to be able to stop a team like that, even if that's if they can even get past Nebraska-Omaha.
just two WCHA teams in this region. What do you think of Omaha and Colorado College?
Interesting pairing that way. I really like the Tigers, and I really liked what I saw from them this past weekend. That is a team with a ton of talent. Joe Howe, after struggling for a good portion of the year, or at least, you know, not struggling, but not playing up to the standards they expected from him, he's playing much better now. They gave North Dakota quite a run in the semifinals of the WCHA tournament, and with the forward talent they have on that team, I'm not going to predict them to beat Boston College, but I think, you know, as a four seed, they'll be stronger than people expect.
I looked at the Tigers, and if you want to follow along during the podcast, I guess I should have mentioned we've got our annual NCAA tournament capsules published and posted with keys for each team, leading scorers, a little bit of tournament history and line charts, basically anything you need to know or want to know right away you've got here. I kind of did some digging on the CC research, and they've got some fascinating numbers this season. Like, they've only got eight guys or seven guys who are plus players on the season. And three or four of those have not played more than 18 games. Part of the reason for that is they've got 52 power play goals.
Wow.
And they also have 11 shorthanded goals allowed. So, like, everything you look at, you're like, well, if this is good, then this might not be as good.
I love that stat that you came up with, Gladie. The 11 shorthanded goals ties them with Michigan Tech. Like, wow, where would you put those two teams together other than that they wear the same colors?
Yeah, well, here's some more bad news along that front.
Okay.
BC has scored 13 shorthanded goals this year.
Oh, yes.
I don't think that's going to be a Vegas prop bet, or if it is, it'll be a pretty low number. Can you tell I just got back from Atlantic City? Plus, let's talk about Boston College. I mean, another note here, John Muse, 8-0-0 in the national tournament in his career. You know, there's guys that just kind of go out and, you know, is he the Chris Osgood of college hockey?
I think that's a very apt comparison. I think that number actually goes up to, when you take just his playoff starts as a whole, something like 21-1. I mean, which is obscene, really, and I think that's a good comparison for him, because, you know, he's not flashy, he's not spectacular, he's just does his job, and he's done his job really since day one, since he stepped on campus and kind of assumed the starting role there, and it seems like everybody else, the other guys, always are getting the headlines, but he goes out there, he's dependable, he's solid, and, you know, at the end of the game, you look up at the scoreboard and he's got a W.
Jess, what can you tell us a little bit, and James, we'll wrap this region with some more Michigan talk, but what can you tell us about Nebraska-Omaha? This is a team that I think probably exceeded expectations since they were kind of the new guy, and the old guard of the WCHA tends to make you walk the walk before they'll acknowledge you're able to play at all.
They did a nice job of walking the walk this year. Exceeded expectations by a long stretch for a lot of people, myself included. And, you know, talking to Dean Blaze a little bit this past weekend, where he was a unlikely spectator, non-participant in the Final Five, and not happy about it. You know, he said, for the most part, they were fine. One team had their number, and that happened to be Bemidji State, and it cost them a spot in the conference tournament this weekend. But he really likes the way they're playing. Not only scoring goals, but John Faulkner, who, you know, may or may not be an elite goalie, and I think we'll find out a lot more about that soon. He likes that, and, you know, looking at some of the notes and the tweets coming out of Omaha once the pairings were announced, they pointed out they've beat Michigan three out of the last four times. I mean, this is a team they know pretty well from just last year when they were still in the CCHA. So an interesting matchup for them. Again, I'm probably not ready to pick an upset there, but I think they'll hold their own at least.
Yeah, that's a
that's one thing I noticed right away, too, when the pairings were announced, is that popped right out at me, you know. Michigan and Omaha, and that's, you know, and obviously they have the familiarity being in the being CCHA rivals for so many years, and they really do have a pretty good rivalry, as James, I'm sure, can tell you. You know, going all the way back to, I think it was 1999 when Omaha knocked Michigan out of the CCHA tournament in the semifinals at Joe Louis Arena.
How was that picking?
Were you?
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of the spark, and through the rest of the UNO's tenure in the CCHA, those two teams really maintained a pretty heated rivalry. So I think that that's a good matchup for UNO coming in.
And I tell you, Omaha fans travel too, and that's a makeable drive for them. I think it's maybe 5 or 6 hours to get to St. Louis. So there will be a good contingent in red there. You know, not that that makes any difference on the ice, but I think they'll feel...
you son of a gun. You knew I was going to make some smart-ass comment about that.
Yeah, I know. If Gladdy had his way, they'd play that games in a studio, and that'd be fine. But
like the moon landing.
Exactly.
Well, I read all these comments about attendance at the regionals and at the league tournaments, and I think of all the illustrious history of fans scoring overtime goals in college hockey. All right.
Wow. A deterioration preview, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh no. I've got all kinds of rants ready for tonight.
Good stuff.
James, Michigan, in a 30 seconds or less, why they'll win, why they won't.
If they win, it'll be because of Carl Hagelin and Louis Caparuso just taking control of it, scoring goals. And those two guys are definitely capable of doing it, even against the teams that they're going to see in this regional that are all high caliber. If they lose, I think it'll be partly psychological. They just have kind of had a knack for not showing up when they need to a couple times this year, namely Friday night. They were just never in that game. And as I mentioned earlier, Brandon Berlon, he had an allergic reaction to some medicine after he had strep throat. And as of Saturday night, the report from Red was he's not even well enough to come down and watch the game with Joe Louis. So I can't believe he's going to be in good shape by Friday afternoon.
Not a good bounce when your medicine is making you sick.
Yeah. That's the one thing that kind of concerns me about Michigan, is not just Berlon's medicine making him sick, but they've had a real rash of injuries here late in the season, and they had okay depth to begin with, actually pretty good depth, but I think they're starting to get a little thin in some spots where it'll I think especially hamper them if they're able to get past UNO, and if they ended up meeting BC in a regional final. I think you can kind of say that for all the teams in this regional, that BC just has superior depth, and they'll be a very tough out for any of the other three.
Yeah, I agree with that, because if you look at what they had to do to replace Berlon this weekend, Kevin Clare went in the lineup, played just fine, for a guy who hasn't played a lot of minutes, and then Lee Moffey and Mac Bennett played together. Red was really happy with the way they played, and I thought they served themselves well. But once you get past the Western Michigans and the UNOs of the world to Boston College, which is truly an elite team, and if they had played Miami this weekend, you would have seen it as well. You can't expect those guys to compete there.
How well did Hunwick bounce back Saturday in the third place game?
Sorry?
How well did Hunwick bounce back in the third place game Saturday?
I thought, it wasn't his best game, but it wasn't his worst game. He made a lot of saves. He was level-headed. But, Friday night was really alarming to me, because that's the first time I've seen him really lose his cool.
All right. Any last call thoughts on the West region?
You want to make a pick?
Yeah, let's do that. People like that.
People like opinions.
People like predictions.
Yeah.
I'm glad nobody read the ESPN chat the other day. okay, Speak up if you're not picking BC. And there's your answer.
I'll speak up. What kind of WCHA homer would I be if I didn't pick CC to be the upset 4 seed to come out of that region? There we go.
The Tigers.
I've gushed enough already, but I was impressed.
Good. Good deal.
And you know, look at the history. We always get 4 seeds coming out somewhere, so that might be the one.
Could be. You're right.
Plus, you know, the last time I saw Boston College play in St. Louis, it didn't end well.
It played great 58 minutes.
Yeah. One bad line change.
Yep. That's right. And then whatever Brian Boyle did.
Yeah, exactly. What was
one? You give up a face-off goal in the neutral zone. All right. Let's.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
Well, it is.
It was that night.
It was that night. Okay. So, yep, there's your West Regional, Boston College, Colorado College, and Michigan versus Nebraska Omaha. We should mention those are Friday-Saturday games at Scott Trade Center in St. Louis. The next region we will discuss is the Midwest region in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Dreams are forged. Character is tested. Teams are united. Champions win here. The road to the championship continues. Don't miss the 2011 NCAA Division I Men's Ice Hockey Midwest Regional, March 26th and 27th. Hosted by Michigan Technological University at the Resch Center in Green Bay, Wisconsin. For information, visit ncaa.com/tickets.
All right, Midwest Region, Green Bay. These are Saturday, Sunday games. North Dakota, number one seed in the region, versus RPI, and Denver versus Western Michigan. North Dakota is the hottest team in the country, if it's not Boston College. And what were your impressions of the Sioux, Jess, at the Final Five?
You know, same impressions that I've had of them all season. It's just incredible depth. They can roll so many guys, and you know, their goaltending's good. It's I don't know that their goaltending's great. You know, the numbers are good, but I still wonder how much Aaron Dell is tested on a nightly basis. I saw Denver put up 40 some shots last night, and I don't remember him making a good spectacular save. Now maybe that's just because he's in great position all the time. But their forward lines are so deep and their defense is so big that that's just a team that's playing with a ton of talent and obviously playing with a lot of confidence right now as well.
And to do that without Gregoire.
I mean, you know, we've talked about this before, but you lose Che Genaway for a significant portion of the season. You lose Danny Christo for a significant portion of the season. Now you've lost Gregoire for, you know, who knows how long. And yet they just keep rolling. I mean, they haven't lost in, I think, 13 games now.
That's the number.
Yep. That's a good thing at this time of year.
How did Crystal look?
He looked fine.
Good.
And you talk about a guy who everybody was watching every time he was on the ice.
Oh, yeah.
You know, welcome back, Danny, his first shift out of the gate. He scores a goal, not only, you know, to score, but first goal of the game, gets the crowd going. Yeah, there was a crowd there. Sorry, I mentioned it again. Anyway, and I told people afterwards what I loved about it was, if you're a Sioux fan, it was a Ryan Duncan goal. It was one of those where, yeah, I know you've got the post covered, but you left me 2 inches above your shoulder, and I'm going to put it right there, and he did. It was a neat thing for him. Good comeback.
And Denver.
Denver is a good hockey team, and I wouldn't have said that a week ago. They had not played well down the stretch. I thought, you know, they would have trouble surviving the first round of the WCHA playoffs versus anyone except Minnesota State, because Minnesota State came in very cold. And you look at those two games, Denver put themselves in a position to lose both. I thought, you know, this is a team that's going to be one and out at the Final Five, and let's see what they do in the NCAA playoffs. But this is what's impressive about Denver, and I wrote about this a little bit. They're finally healthy. The last couple of years going into the NCAAs, they have been so beat up. Even last year when they won the WCHA title and almost won the playoff title, they went into the playoffs with just nothing left in the tank. And the number that stunned me from George Gwozdecki was he said 9 guys had surgery within 2 weeks of their season ending last year. So that not being the case this year with the health they've got and with the way Sam Britton is playing in goal, that's a team that I think you're going to see them at least win their first NCAA tournament game since 2005 this year.
It's been that long.
The national championship game in 05 was the last time they won an NCAA tournament game.
Well,
you know, I think that first round matchup with Denver and Western Michigan is good for Denver because, you know, the Pioneers are a really young team up and down that roster, and they've got a lot of young guys playing key positions, very key roles on that team, and then they're going up against a Western Michigan team, which obviously doesn't have a lot of experience in big games. You know, basically it's been limited to the big games they've played late in this season and then at the CCHA tournament. And the one thing that's really been a concern for DU has been that they've had a tendency to get down early, give up first goals, trail after, you know, find themselves down after the first period. And I think that, you know, getting in a game, at least early on, against a team like Western, which is similarly inexperienced on this kind of stage, bodes well for them. But that youth factor, I think, and if you go up and down Denver's results over the course of the season, you know, they've had a tendency to lay some eggs every once in a while. You know, I specifically go back to November when they lost 9-2 at Colorado College. They had that game where at Minnesota in February where they trailed 6-0 after 2 periods. That kind of sticks in my head a little bit.
I hate to bring this up, but they did manage to lose to Michigan Tech, which
anyone else did.
Lost 3-2.
That was actually right after that Minnesota game.
Yeah. Yeah, based on, you know, games like that and based on the way they played in the first round of the WCHA, I had very low expectations from that team when they got to St. Paul. And from, you know, I don't know if you watched last night's game, but once they tied it up and made it 2-2, the Pioneers dominated that game for about the next 15 minutes. And North Dakota really had to hang on just to keep overtime going for a while there. So that's a good hockey team.
Let's move into their opponent in the first round, Western Michigan Broncos. And we, James, I'm going to pay you an ultimate compliment here and kind of move you into the club, so to speak. But we've talked about in the past and taken credit for, quote unquote, discovering Dustin Penner or Nathan Gerby by being early to the party. I think you were early to the party on how good this Western Michigan Broncos team was.
And to this day, I still think that they're better than most people think they are. And after watching them this weekend, 5-2 final doesn't look that great against Miami, but I watched them go down 2-0, and it looked like that game was over. And we all know Miami's arguably one of the best teams in the country, certainly deserving a number one seed. And they fought right back into it. They're very level-headed. They don't have all the talent in the world. They don't have those first-round draft picks that some of the other teams they'll face do. The one thing that concerns me about them, though, they're really, really bad on the penalty kill. I think they're 48th in the country, and it showed this weekend. I think Michigan got one goal on 3 chances. Miami had 2 goals on 3 chances. And, you know, you look at the teams they could face here, RPI 18.3%, but then you know, in the first round game with Denver, Denver's 22nd in the country at almost 19%, and North Dakota's a top 10 power play. And I think that's really going to be a problem for them. As you guys said, they're young and inexperienced. They're bound to take some penalties at some point. So that's one area they got to shore up if they want to compete.
James, I got to ask you a question quick.
All right.
And Gladdy, you might want to just turn your headphones off for a second.
Oh,
but
boy.
What was the crowd like? I mean, have they ignited the fan base? Are the Bronco fans on board with this team? Are they back?
And can they help the penalty killing?
And can they help? Yeah, no, but you know what? You know, you wonder about this when a program's been down for so long. Is it going to take a while to kind of rebuild that? But what was kind of the following there?
They've always had a good group of students and a good group of local people that support them very vocally. I was really impressed with how many people showed up at Joe Louis Arena. And when they got that second goal to tie the game, the beginning of the third period last night, normally that kind of atmosphere at Joe Louis is reserved for a Michigan State game where you can feel the building rocking. And it was by no means full. There was no 20,000 people there or anything like that. But they've built the enthusiasm with the fans, and I think that they're going to be able to build on that. Green Bay is a totally doable regional travel-wise, and so I'm sure they'll have at least respectable representation there. And then
I know people who've made that drive overnight. You can do it.
Yep. And then going forward, I think that they truly have re-energized it, because the Lawson Lunatics, the student base, they were right in front of the press box, and it was really easy to hear what they were doing and see their enthusiasm. But as the time was running down against the Michigan game, looking down at the lower level and seeing the alumni, the older people, and just general people from Kalamazoo and people from the Detroit area that were supporting Western Michigan, I was really impressed. And that's the kind of, like you said, usually that doesn't happen overnight, but it looks like it has in Kalamazoo.
Cool.
That brings us to a team that's a pretty unique case in this tournament, and that's Rensselaer. RPI hasn't played hockey in the last few weeks, meaningful competitive hockey, I should say. Practices have been spirited, I'm sure, and there was certainly some optimism based on, what we know in the current landscape of college hockey, that, you have a pretty good idea of where you stand throughout the year. Things went right for Rensselaer, and they got another chance to play. They're in the national tournament for the first time in a long time, 1995, their last trip. I think it's a statement about this RPI team and about the program that they've come pretty far since, Seth Appert took over as head coach, and his first full recruiting class was this current group of seniors. I wrote about this during the regular season. They're, this group has just meant so much to them. Both what they've done on the ice, but also the values that they've brought to the program. Work ethic, responsibility, academic performance, how you carry yourself, all those things that, you can build a good team with good players, but, RPI needed to build a good program. And it's in pretty solid footing, even when these guys leave, because of what they've done. Chase Palachek's the guy Tyler Helfrich is very, very good as well. Brian Brutlag brings a lot of energy on the wing. John Kennedy, defenseman, terrific player, and captain. So this team can be dangerous against North Dakota. Maybe that's going to be a tough game, no doubt about it. But RPI, they're unknown. you don't know if they're going to come out and just play unbelievable after, having the last couple weeks off, or if maybe they're just will be, it'll be too much to ask of them because of the time off they've had and because of how hot North Dakota is right now.
The one thing that stands out at me when you look at Rensselaer is, you mentioned some of the things that they have working against them, but they may have the best goalie in this regional in Alan York. He's certainly got some terrific numbers. His save percentages.
I'd say they do have the best goalie.
Yeah, I mean, Britton's been playing, has played well at times, and you look at Dell's numbers, and they're really, really good. But again, we don't know if that's a product of his play or the play of the team in front of him. So I think that's something to keep an eye on is, if York can come out and play up to the best of his capabilities, North Dakota could be in for some trouble. And as you said, there's some talent on that Rensselaer in that lineup, some real high end talent.
When they get going, they're really tough to play against. They pressure in all kinds of all different parts of the ice, and they're tough. You know, they're a tougher team to play against because they're just a little different. They kind of find pressure points and really, you know, will try to make plays in those areas. You know, they're great at both blue lines, both on entry into the zone and defending their own blue line. You know, they'll do things. They'll run a lot of pick plays. You know, it may be, you know, something where officiating could make a difference. You know, but they're tenacious, and it's just it's uncomfortable to play. I think that's the best word. It's uncomfortable to play against them. That being said, their style will yield chances against. If you can stay poised, you know, and make that first good breakout pass or chip a puck here and there, you know, you might be set up for some 3-on-2s or 2-on-1s. So, you know, North Dakota's the kind of team that could thrive on that, but it's not something that, you know, maybe that they will have experienced at any point this year. And if that adjustment period goes poorly, RPI can pop a couple goals, and York's definitely a good enough goalie to make a difference. His phone's been ringing, either his phone or that of his family advisor. So he's still a college hockey player, and I'm sure he's happy that he is.
The knowing what you know about Rensselaer and North Dakota, is it a case with the style of game that Rensselaer plays that, you know, that's really going to frustrate North Dakota early? And just this, I just base that on what I've seen from North Dakota. It seems like, you know, they're kind of a straight line team. They don't.
Right.
They want to get the puck. They want to go. They want to keep attacking. They want to hit you, and they want to get the puck back and get it toward the net. I mean, they don't. That's their MO, is they just want to go up and down.
Let's go play hockey. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, Bus, that's a good point, and I kind of alluded to this in the capsules. I almost want, for the sake of the game, you know, of this game, this 60 minutes or more, for it to be tied after the first period. Because you've got the point that you brought up with North Dakota maybe having to adjust. North Dakota's on TV an awful lot during the season, and all these programs archive these games. RPI is not on TV at all. I think the preparation and scouting that Dave Hackstall and his staff does will have a big impact on this game. But then you look at, will RPI be playing up to, you know, speed? I mean, they haven't played in 2 weeks, and the last game they played was a first-round playoff game. You know, and intensity, you know, amplifies, and emotion amplifies when you get in this tournament. You know, it could be 5-0 North Dakota. It could be 4-0 Rensselaer after the first period. So I almost hope that it's, you know, 1-1 or 2-2, or, you know, 2-1, 3-2, you know, whatever it is, that it's close after the first 20 minutes, because there's so much that can happen. It's going to be really intriguing to watch that specific period of this tournament, those 20 minutes, to see what happens there.
Well, and you mentioned, Joe, you mentioned officiating.
I hate to do it, too.
No, but I mean, that will make a huge difference in the way I think this all turns out, because North Dakota is such a physical team. You know, they thrive on, you know, banging bodies and
well, they're going to like this game then, because they're going to play a team that likes to do that too.
You know, and so what I'm saying about that is, I'm not saying that's an advantage for one team or another, but, you know, if you let Ben Blood play the way Ben Blood likes to play, that's a huge advantage for North Dakota. If that stuff gets called as 2-minute minors right away, it's going to completely change things, and I think that'll be fascinating to find out, too, how that first period plays out.
That's a good point. That is a good point. So that'll do it for the Midwest region, I think. Anybody, last thoughts, last questions?
Predictions? Are we making predictions still?
Oh, yeah. Anybody who... okay, yeah. Let's run through, make your pick. Start with James.
I got to go with North Dakota. They're playing so well. But I will say that I wouldn't be surprised if Western Michigan at least made a go of it and won a first-round game.
All right. Bus?
My head says North Dakota. And I think that's what I'll go with on the record. But I think this is going to be more wide open than maybe people expect. I mean, when you look at the four teams, you think, well, North Dakota, you know, maybe Denver can give them a little bit of a run, but, you know, ultimately it's going to be the Sioux. I'm not ready to write them in just yet. I think they'll have a tough time in the first game with Rensselaer. at least for a little bit. And I think whomever they get in the regional final, assuming they win, it's going to be a good game.
Jess,
I'm disappointed that North Dakota and Denver are in the same bracket. I think they're two of you know, probably the five best teams in the country right now. So I will pick those two to meet on Sunday afternoon. And based on what I saw last night, I'm going to pick Denver in an upset. I've seen that they can skate with North Dakota, and I think on that stage, for whatever reason, I see the Pioneers scoring one more.
Okay, and last year at this time, I put my fist, you know, right down on the desk, and I said, North Dakota's the best team. They're going to win, absolutely. I believe that was right after I said Cornell's going to be in the national championship game against them. So, got a note from a Sioux fan today saying, don't you dare pick our team. Sorry, Sioux fan. Team's too good. When Crystal comes back and is a difference maker, you know, forget about it. That's too much. It's too much. And, you know, and even if Dell maybe struggles, which our next region we'll talk about is the East, and I want to bring up a point, so we'll come back a little bit to Dell, but there's too much there, you know, too much, and I just, when you have the best team and they're playing their best hockey, it's a pretty good combination. So North Dakota's the pick here. So once again, Midwest region, Green Bay, Wisconsin, Saturday and Sunday games, and an intriguing first period to check out. I mean, if you're gonna watch one period, that's the one to watch. RPI North Dakota. So, okay, our next region we will discuss is the East Region in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Dreams are forged. Character is tested. Teams are united. Champions win here. The road to the championship continues. Don't miss the 2011 NCAA Division I Men's Ice Hockey East Regional, March 25th and 26th. Hosted by Fairfield University and Yale University at Arena at Harbor Yard in Bridgeport, Connecticut. For information, visit ncaa.com/tickets.
Okay, East Region in Bridgeport. Matchups are Yale versus Air Force and Union versus Minnesota Duluth. These are Friday, Saturday games at the Webster Bank Arena. Union Minnesota Duluth will be the early Friday game. That's the 3:00 start. Yale, as the top seed, normally would play in that spot, but they've got the 6:30 game, and it's pretty close to their campus. So for all you people who want to talk about crowds, I think there's going to be a lot of Yale fans on board for that one. Another thing to bring up, we talked a little bit about this with Nebraska, Omaha, and Michigan. Yale and Air Force have already played this season. Air Force won that game.
That's right.
With four third-period goals. And it was Yale's first loss of the season. So there's some storylines in that game. I guess I'll start by some comments on Yale. Saw them, of course, this past weekend. At Atlantic City, they won the ECAC Hockey playoff championship. And the thing that intrigues me most about this team is that, you know, you look at some teams around the country and some of the best players, and, you know, you'll say, oh, that guy's a setup guy and this guy's the finisher. You know, that guy's the goal scorer and this guy's maybe more the playmaker. They've got unbelievable balance in their scoring. Like, if you look, and I wrote about this in my coverage of the championship game, you know, they've got, you know, O'Neill, Carney, Miller, you know, they've got, like, the line is maybe, you know, 16, 17 goals and 25, 26 assists. So any of those guys can beat you. And what it also tells me is it's unselfish. You know, they'll make that extra pass to get the backdoor goal. And they're really, really dangerous in transition. So that to me is what Yale has going for it. The other thing it has going is goaltending. A lot of the country and a lot of the college hockey fans watched last year's regional final against Boston College, which I'm pretty sure was 9-7. You know, that's not a concern anymore. Ryan Rondeau has been tremendous all year. He's playing his best right now. Three straight shutouts, over 200 minutes, scoreless streak. So Yale's got a lot going for it. Number one overall seed, despite the angry protestations of maybe some people out west. But
are you speaking about anybody in particular?
Oh, I don't know. That's a tough team, and I think the element of sneaking up that maybe Atlantic Hockey has enjoyed in the past, if it's a Holy Cross Minnesota game or RIT Denver or even Air Force Michigan, that's gone now. People know that these teams can play, and you better come ready to win.
Well, it's doubly gone, not because of the past history of those teams in the tournament, but also because Yale got stung by Air Force in November.
Yep.
I believe it was November.
It was November 14th.
In fact, I remember, I think we were sitting around
waiting. We were waiting on it for the power rankings. It was Sunday night game.
We'll be honest. We were like, well, Yale, once they win, we'll put Yale here. And
well, they were up 3-0 in the third period.
Yeah, and then Yale didn't win. So, you know, obviously that memory is pretty fresh. So, Yale's not going to sneak in Air Force, is not going to sneak in and surprise anybody. Most of all, Yale. Obviously they know, from firsthand experience what Air Force is capable of.
Just Minnesota Duluth also in this region. They're playing against a Union team that was also upset in the quarterfinals. They were upset in the quarterfinals. Minnesota Duluth obviously was not, but
although Minnesota Duluth was upset in the first round, I would say.
The Thursday game.
I was at that game. I mean, they were shut down by Bemidji State. The Bulldogs started out playing very well, and then Dan Bacala did what Dan Bacala does, or did for a lot of the season, which was just really frustrate a much better offensive team. That was the word I got from the Bulldog coaches on and off the record was, you know, they make you play your game, and I guess what was disappointing was that the Bulldogs fell into that because they have so much firepower on that top line and a pretty well-established second line, although I've been high on JT Brown all season, and he had, I won't say a bad game, but didn't have the impact that he's had earlier in the season. So seen the Bulldogs get shut down a couple times the last few times I've seen him play, and that's a big concern going out there to face what is a very good Union team.
Yeah, let me talk about Union a little bit, and we've talked about them on the podcast a little bit. Unfortunately, another team, maybe like RPI, that people don't get to see a lot nationwide. I was surprised by the loss to Colgate because of what Union does well, and they just never could pull away. That's how Colgate advanced from the first round when they knocked off RPI. And then in the quarterfinal series against Union, you know, Union would get a lead and then Colgate would tie it up. And they just can never get rid of them. But it might have also, you know, if there's a team that can be helped by having the week off before the NCAA tournament, it might be Union. They had the week off before the Colgate series, though, and obviously lost that one, so who knows what that means, but they played a lot of hockey. The way their academic schedule sets up, they play two games every weekend for the last, like, 10 weekends of the year. You know, and it's a grind. And then they were, you know, right down to the wire with Yale and ended up edging the Bulldogs by a point for the first place in the ECAC hockey by playing 14-1-1 in their last 16. So, you know, they had a long, grueling run to the end of the season. Maybe this is a time they'll come out and refocus. first Division I appearance in the national tournament. Will they be overwhelmed? Will they be ready? Will they be composed? You know, you don't know those kinds of things. So we'll see what we get from Union. Real good brief scouting report. Pressure you all over the ice. Really strong in front of the net. They scored a lot of their goals right around the crease. And Keith Kincaid was the goalie of the year in ECAC hockey and first team all-league goalie. So that's in a league with Rondeau, who's got a 1.8, you know, goals against and 7 shutouts, and Alan York that we talked about, and James Mello at Dartmouth. So it means a lot when you win goalie of the year in this league.
Bloody, all I think of when I think of Union, though, is the comments from the Western Michigan guys we talked about before.
Oh, yeah.
This is a team that's deep, and it looks a lot like some of the powerhouse CCHA teams and WCHA teams. And that's straight from the horse's mouth of a team that beat them. So,
yeah, I was looking a little bit and maybe was a little concerned. One of the things that I thought about with Union was they had some big games and maybe weren't at their best in the ones that maybe had a highlighter on or had an extra eye on. So that was a little bit of a concern for me. I think they split with RPI both weekends they played. That's become a really good rivalry. And now both teams are in the national tournament, which is really tremendous for that region since they lost their league tournament. you know, they had Western Michigan, you know, going out there. You can really put a stamp on the first half of the season. And it's a tough time to play. It's like 3 days before Christmas, right? Or
yeah.
You know, everyone else is already on break, and you got those two games, and you go out there, and they didn't probably play their best, but obviously earned the respect of Western Michigan, and you know, maybe it was Frozen Four preview. Who knew?
Who would have said that in October?
Yeah. So you've got that. Fourth seed in this region is Air Force. We touched on that a little bit when we talked about Yale. One point we didn't make is guess who's back? Jacques Lamoureux is red hot right now. This guy has got 9 goals in his last 7 games, has scored in 7 straight games, had the game winner in the third period. Pretty sure it was third period. Game winner in both games this weekend, including in the 1-0 win over RIT. Remember RIT, everybody? They were in the Frozen Four last year. You know, and this kid was a Hobie hat trick finalist, and now he's right there. He was the hat trick, right?
Yep, he sure was. I've been. Now, this is another. They're a very interesting club in that they've really lost a ton of people, maybe from the teams that that you know most fans remember from you know 2-3 years ago. You know, Lamoureux is about the only recognizable name on that roster, really, because just about everybody else that you think of when you think about Air Force is gone.
Hurricane.
Yeah, guys.
Jeff Hayner is long gone.
Jeff Hayner, yeah.
Yeah, it's really it's Lamoureux and Derek Burnett are really the only two guys that that really harken back to that time. So it's a pretty impressive job that Frank Sertori has done there to not just in the past get this team into the national tournament and on the brink of a trip to the Frozen Four a couple years ago, but to maintain that and sustain that, not just with a turnover in players, but a switch into a different league, and I think that this program has really established itself, and there's a real high-end rivalry that is now developed between Air Force and RIT and Atlantic Hockey.
Yeah.
That is... I think it goes beyond the ice. I mean, these two teams are positioning themselves to compete for championships You know, it's an arms race, no pun intended, between these two programs, and you know, and I think that's good for that conference to have. I mean, these two teams have really established themselves as a, you know, obviously as a, you know, as a champ, as championship caliber clubs beyond their conference. You know,
here's an interesting thing about this game to me, and maybe how it stacks up relative to other games around the country. You know, we talked earlier about Denver not having won a first-round game since 2005. And you've got this Yale team who's making its third straight NCAA tournament appearance. You've got Air Force making its third trip in the last 4 years. Both of those teams have won first-round games more recently than Denver. Yale's first trip 3 years ago, which was in the, or I guess 2 years ago, was in the same building, the same Bridgeport Regional. You know, they got knocked out by Vermont that year. Vermont went on to the Frozen Four, of course. But those guys were so young. I mean, now these guys are veterans, and they won last year. They beat North Dakota. You know, they were in a crazy game with Boston College, who went on to win the national championship. But Denny Carney was in that game. Chris Cahill was in that game. You know, Trentowski, Matzak, five of their 6D from this season played in that first round game against Vermont 2 years ago. So these guys, you know, have been through this, and if you're one of those people who buys into tournament experience, Yale has it and Air Force has it. So I take a lot from that. I think it'll be a well played game as a result.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right about that. And then you throw in the history of what happened earlier this season that just kind of, you know, there's that other, you know, you just put that whole, there's another log to put on this fire, so to speak.
Yeah, it'll be a good one. It'll be
good. It will be.
Hope is a good Friday.
Hope is a good thing. And if you're Air Force, you know, because of that game, despite the standings, despite the seedings, all of that, despite the fact that you're playing in Yale's backyard, you've got hope.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
You've done it before. You've beat them.
That's true. Also want to give a podcast shout-out, early shout-out, to Ken McMillan, Atlantic Hockey senior writer here at Inch. Tremendous coverage from Rochester and the Atlantic Hockey Tournament. Good teams in that league. We said it all year on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We know people won't believe us, but they're good clubs. So,
Is K-Mac still planning on hitting two regionals this coming weekend? I know he's going to be in Bridgeport, but
He's going to be in Bridgeport.
But didn't he say he was going to maybe try and get to Manchester for the championship game, too?
I don't think so, but he might.
All right.
He did mention that in the past. I don't know if he's going to do it or not.
I think he did it more when it was like an Albany-Worcester thing.
Or Worcester, yeah.
He's like Where's Waldo. He pops up everywhere.
He's great. So, yeah, Air Force freshman goalie. Keep an eye on that. Oh, that brings me to another point I wanted to make. I think there's two players in this whole tournament. You know, Jess, you talked about with Danny Christo. Every time he came over the boards, people were watching him.
Sure.
I think Arundel and Ryan Rondeau are the two guys that just, you know, I almost feel bad for them because what's the standard? You know, both of their teams are, like, if they don't make the Frozen Four, it's, like, kind of probably going to be looked at as a disappointment. At the start of the year, they really weren't counted on to be the man, and now they are the man.
Right.
But one bad game in the tournament erases 30 good games in the regular season. So.
And I know we don't want to go back to Green Bay too much, but in fairness, Danny Christo is the guy everybody's watching at the start of the game. By the end of the weekend, everybody's watching Aaron Trupp. So, Evan Trupp. Every time he touched the puck, just based on some things he did, conventional and non-conventional. Anyway.
Yeah, let's come back to that and the deterioration. I saw that.
Yeah,
that was
interesting. We'll get back to that.
Reminds me from a movie line. Yeah. Next, last call here. Picks. Yeah, picks time. James, I always make you go first, don't I?
Union.
I'm terrible at this. Union. Bus is Dutch. Bus, you're Dutch?
My Dutch.
Going with the Dutch.
I am going with the Dutch.
They were your Dutch last year.
You know, we've seen this before, though, from teams that have lost in the first round of their playoffs and then gone on to the Frozen Four. You know, Miami, I think, did it a couple years ago when they lost to Northern, I think it was.
Denver won a national championship.
Denver 05, right?
Yeah. But
Denver 04.
Denver 04. Lost in Denver, yeah.
Yes.
The fun Denver.
The fun Denver.
The fun Denver, and there was the business-like Denver.
The gold standard. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Union.
Jess?
I'm going with an all-Bulldog final, and I can't pick against the top-ranked team, so I'll go with Yale.
Really?
Really.
There you go.
My confidence in the other Bulldogs who was shaken this week, and I just...
Oh, that's true. That's true.
I that top line is amazing, but I don't know that there's enough other stuff there.
I'm not high on their goaltending. Being UMD.
Yeah, that's chief among many people's concerns.
Well, that's not a good problem to have against...
Right.
Against the...
Yeah. You know the conventional...
32% thing. Power play.
Yeah, and you know, that's something I'm brought up in the... in the capsule about Duluth, and I'm, you know, going off the top of my head at whatever time it is, Monday morning now, so forgive me if I screw this up, but, actually this was a note that was brought up during the selection show, about Yale, Union, and Air Force are three of the top four teams in the country in terms of power play success. And they're all, you know, you mentioned Union's about 31 and a half or something like that, and the other two teams, Yale and Air Force, are like 25%, 24% success rate. And then you've got Duluth, which is among the top 15 in the nation in penalty minutes, and then their penalty kill is about 80%, which is like in right around 30-35 area in terms of success rate penalty killing nationally. Let's not throw in some concerns maybe about goaltending. That's not a real good combination.
I remember us saying earlier in the year, you've never heard someone say, I wish I would have spent less time in college. You've also never heard someone say, who needs a hot goalie come playoff time?
Exactly. My pick out of here, geez, Jess, as you said, your confidence was shaken by Minnesota Duluth this past weekend.
And in fairness, I didn't have a ton of confidence to start with, but what I saw against Bemidji, I think, would concern anyone who roots for the Bulldogs.
My confidence was bolstered by Yale, what I saw. I'm going with the Yale Bulldogs to come out of this region. Even though I think that Union is as good a team as Yale is, and proved it, especially in the second half of the season.
As everyone has come to expect, Gladdy and I are on the same page.
Podcast tradition, Jess. We just get free all the time.
And the crowd goes wild.
How was the crowd? All right. So there you go. That's East Regional Bridgeport, Connecticut games Friday and Saturday. And now we'll move on to the Northeast Region in Manchester, New Hampshire.
Dreams are forged. Character is tested. Teams are united. Champions win here. The road to the championship continues. Don't miss the 2011 NCAA Division I Men's Ice Hockey Northeast Regional, March 26th and 27th. Hosted by the University of New Hampshire at the Verizon Wireless Arena in Manchester, New Hampshire. For information, visit ncaa.com/tickets.
Well, it's the CCHA Hockey East crossover region. Number one seed Miami faces New Hampshire, another host school, participating at the region they're hosting, just like Michigan Tech. Oh, no. And then...
Ouch.
Sorry.
Just like the St. Louis Billikens.
And then Merrimack versus Notre Dame. So,
just like Michigan Tech did in 1981 when they were in the NCAA tournament the last time.
So, James, let's get to what you see out of Miami right now. We'll just start there at the top seed and work down the region.
They're a really good hockey team, and they're playing the best hockey I think they've played, you know, maybe even over the past couple of years, and they've had some really good teams. For those people who aren't familiar with it or don't follow Miami, there was a game back a couple months ago where they got beat 7-4 by Michigan State, and seven goals was something that was unacceptable to the players on the team and unacceptable to their coach, Enrico Blasi. And the next night, the Saturday night game at Michigan State, he sat four regular players, four guys who you know, are always contributors, guys who help them win a lot of games, but that kind of sent the message that the way they were playing was unacceptable, and since then they've been on a tear and never looked back. And this weekend they were awesome. You know, that top line with Camper and Mealy and Smith and Vogelhuber and then, you know, Carter Camper out there on the power play. Their offense looks nearly unstoppable, but in a way, I think they got kind of unlucky with a pretty tough four seed they're going to have to go against.
Yeah, that's a pretty good team at times in New Hampshire. They kind of remind me of Minnesota Duluth. You know, they've got a number one line that you really have to be careful with, but then after that, it's, you know, there's some good guys there, but if you keep that first line in check, you're probably going to be okay. And then there's the goalie thing with Matt DiGirolamo, who has been very good, but not as good in the last 2 months or so.
You know what, though, just with Miami, the thing that I think could make the difference in a game, you know, UNH has got some good top-tier talent, some guys who can score goals. You know, Blake Kessel is obviously an excellent player, but what Miami's gotten, what's worked for them as they've gotten to the Frozen Four and to the national title game 2 years ago, is those goals from the role players, guys who you got to check your line chart. Who is this? Who is he? What does he do?
Yeah.
And you know, you look this past weekend, they got a goal each night from Brian Palazzo, and then the weekend before, I think they had a goal from Patrick Teasling, and you know, Cameron Schilling had a couple of points. He's a defenseman, but one who's not typically known as an offensive defenseman. When you add that into it, you know, Andy Mealy and playing 2 points a game pace, and Carter Camper and Riley Smith also in the top four nationally scoring, they're going to be a tough team to stop. They look great.
Yeah, let's mention this also about Miami. They've got, we talked about North Dakota being hot and Boston College being hot going into this tournament. Miami's unbeaten in 13 games. They're 10-0-3, so you know, they're right there, and of course you don't win the CCHA without playing well, especially on that last weekend. Boss, you've seen it. I mean, that the Final Five is really tough, but CCHA seems to have fewer first round and quarterfinal upsets. But winning those last two games is a real big chore.
Yeah, it is, especially when you look at a team like Miami coming from...
I mean,
from,
haven't won it before. They've been a bunch of people, a couple Frozen Fours.
Not only have they not won it, but when you get to be like Miami going up there and playing, you know, it ends up... A lot of the times you're playing a Michigan or, you know, it ends up being a road game for Miami almost because they don't have a ton of fans there because of the distance. But, you know, I saw... a decent chunk of their games this weekend, and what really impressed me was, you know, they really did play well in every facet of the game. But what really impressed me, I think, was their resolve as far as coming out and, you know, they just really wanted to put the hammer down on the opponent right away. And they did that against Notre Dame. They did that even though Western did come back later in that game. They did that. They jumped out to the early lead, and you know, they had the mindset of, okay, let's go out there and take care of this. And I think I really do like the matchup. I know they're playing in Manchester against UNH, but I think that's a good matchup for Miami because if there's If there's a team in this tournament that can check a top line, it's Miami. I mean, you know, if there's a team that can shut down a high octane trio, it's the Red Hawks. And I think you made a great point, James, about them in the past couple of years getting the goals, timely goals from guys who you maybe don't expect to score. And, you know, we obviously saw that this past weekend. We've seen that from them in a tournament the past couple of years. And, you know, with that said, you know, there, I don't.
Last year in overtime against Michigan?
It was Elden Hirschfeld in overtime, and then I think Curtis McKenzie had another goal that weekend. Hirschfeld, I think, yep, had one in the Frozen Four the year before.
Yeah.
Those are the guys that's gotten it done for Miami.
Yeah, good point.
You know, before we move on from Miami, though, we've talked so much about their offense because their offense is so good. The last, you know, these last handful of games, I guess look at the last six games, one goal, one goal, one goal, one goal, one goal, two goals, two goals. You know, they're not giving up shots. They're not giving up goals. This team is outstanding defensively as well, and for all the credit we give their offense, and that credit's due, they're a heck of a team defensively as well.
That's a good point to bring up because it's something I noticed when looking into Merrimack a little bit. They played high-scoring games. You know, they've been in, like, whether it's one-sided or close, you know, it's 6-1, it's 5-3, it's, you know, 7-2. You know, their last eight games, there's been 50 goals scored. And will that hold up at this time of the year? And you're against the Notre Dame team that, you know, can score some goals, but also, you know, is going to play a responsible game under Jeff Jackson. So that matchup, it might be a contrast of styles. This game of all the games in this entire tournament to me is the absolute coin toss. I mean, I got no idea. If one of the teams won by six goals, I wouldn't be surprised. If the other team won by six goals, I wouldn't be surprised. And if they played 1-0 in double overtime, I wouldn't be surprised. And if they played 7-6 in double overtime, I wouldn't be surprised. So, I mean, I just, there's there's a lot going on in this game, and I don't know that we can even spend that much time breaking it down because, to me, there's a lot of the unexpected in this one.
Right. I think you nailed it right there. And, you know, the one thing that stands out to me is that, I think if you just went on pure talent, you know, Notre Dame, I think, has the edge.
Unquestionably.
They've got a ton of talent on that team.
Yep.
Really, when you break it down, as much talent as any team in the tournament. But that said, they haven't been playing very well lately. But then you get to, you know, Merrimack, which is, you know, when you watch them a little bit, you realize they're obviously a pretty good team with some good individual players. And, you know, I saw a good portion of Friday's game against UNH, and, you know, I liked what I saw from them. You know, I kind of like the style they play. You know, they're a little bit more freewheeling than most of the teams in the country, which obviously leads to some of those high scores. I'm not sure how that's going to translate into the NCAA tournament, where teams tend to play things a little bit more close to the vest. So in that respect, I think that, you know, not only is it a coin flip, but this might be, in my mind, the most interesting first-round matchup of the entire tournament.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. James, if you were an opponent, not even if you're Merrimack, and you could choose to play Notre Dame in a high-scoring game or low-scoring game, which would you pick for your team? Like which doesn't suit Notre Dame?
I would say a low-scoring game because I think that the real weak spot for Notre Dame, I have to say, is their goaltending. And in a high-scoring game, they've got T.J. Tynan and Anders Lee, or, you know, had incredible freshman years. They're guys I think they're both at or above 20 goals, and PJ Tynan went above 50 points for the year. They've got Jeff Costello, they've got Ryan Getzel, they've got Kelly Ritterwall. They've got guys who I think can contribute on the offensive end, but I don't trust Mike Johnson, and if it came to it, I don't trust Stephen Summerhays even less, to make the saves they need in a close game. So I would rather play, if I'm Merrimack or I'm whoever playing against Notre Dame, I'd rather play a low-scoring affair, a lot like that Western Michigan beat them 2-0 the last game of the regular season. I thought that was that's a pretty good example of it. You know, you can shut them down.
Good point.
And the goaltending cost them that game.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go around the horn with picks. And, James, I'm going to let you pick last this time.
All right.
The way that your screen names are appearing on our calling software, I'm just right down the line. Jess, we'll start with you. For all these CCHA and Hockey East teams, you have such strong opinions on.
First of all, congratulations to Merrimack. It's great for them to get in the tournament, a long-suffering program, and happy for them. I don't see it with a happy ending. And, James, I appreciate your CCHA analysis. I think it's going to come down to Miami-Notre Dame. I agree with you. Notre Dame's got a ton of talent, but I cover Minnesota a lot, and I've learned that sometimes having the most talent doesn't mean you're going to win. So I think it'll be a close regional final, but I'll pick Miami to beat Notre Dame in overtime.
Bus.
I'm really intrigued by Merrimack. I think that they maybe are a tad too wide open in a regional where they'll have to play for certain Notre Dame and potentially Miami, two teams that are extremely solid defensively. I think Miami and Notre Dame winning. And I think Miami's going to advance.
All right. Let me bring this up. I watched some games, and maybe it's a starting pitcher in baseball or a running back in football, but one of the things I come back to when I look at some games and try to figure out what might happen is who's got the best player. And maybe Miami has the two or three best players in this region, and that's tough for me to go against. Another thing that really concerns me about Merrimack is that Chris Barton was out of the lineup this past weekend with an injury. He didn't play at the Hockey East Finals. He's got 39 points, second on the team to Stefan DaCosta, who a lot of people know about. So that to me is a little bit of a red flag on Merrimack. And the other thing is they got a lot of wins early against good teams, but when they had their big games down the stretch, with the exception of beating New Hampshire a couple times, they lost twice to Maine, they lost twice to BC. I'm sorry, it wasn't BC, but they didn't play as well in the bigger games, so that to me is a little bit of a red flag. I think Miami is the pick out of this region. And honestly, I'm going to go as far as saying this. I think they're the one team out of any region that I feel most comfortable picking. I feel stronger about Miami than I do about, North Dakota or Yale or, Denver or whomever it might be. So,
more so than Boston College?
Yeah, more than BC. More than BC. So,
all right.
That's where I am on that. So, James. Pick.
I'll also go with.
He's going to take Merrimack. Just to
No, I'm also going to take Miami. They're just playing too well. The one asterisk I'll put by it is, if somebody, be it Merrimack or UNH or Notre Dame. I think back to that 5-5 game at the Joy Center that Miami won in a shootout. If somebody can find a way to generate shots on goal, they might be able to beat Miami because, you know, Cody Reichard and Connor Knapp, Reichard played both games this past weekend, so I'm going to say he's the favorite to play, but, you know, Coach Blasi likes to keep that pretty close to the vest, as I've found out in the past. who knows who he's going to go with, but, you know, both those guys haven't faced a lot of shots, and you look at that 7-4 loss to Michigan State, you look at that 5-5 tie where Notre Dame came back to send that game to overtime. That's the one way I can see somebody beating Miami, but the way their defense played this past weekend against some really, really good opposition, and even in recent weeks before that, I just don't see anybody beating Miami.
All right, that'll wrap up our conversation on the Northeast region. It's not a niche podcast without deterioration, right? So
that's what I hear on the Facebook.
That's what's written on the bathroom walls. We don't have ad to break into this segment, but
you've got something stuck in your craw.
Oh, geez, yeah.
Something grinds your gears.
Maybe not for tonight. Yeah, we'll get there. But let's mention the campus. We don't have a fancy ad for the deterioration segment, but we'll drop this one in. Campus Pizza and Pasta in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So as you get ready to go to the Frozen Four, make sure Campus Pizza is a part of that plan. So.
I hear it's the best pizza in the Twin Cities.
I agree. Never having had it.
No, I think it was voted the best pizza by somebody.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Well, good. So, Campus it's Pizza. Right.
It's a couple blocks south of Mariucci Arena.
Yeah. And the new football.
They have a website and everything. CampusPizza.com.
CampusPizza.com.
So. Have the spicy special. It'll change your life.
And Campus Pizza does not endorse nor necessarily agree with any of the opinions expressed in the Itch podcast. Wow. All right.
Come watch us deteriorate in person.
Yeah.
It's pretty much a given at the Frozen Four.
Let's sell tickets to that.
And get a seat down front.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know if there's going to be a... Yeah, it's... Here's the thing that really... And it's not new. It's something we've talked about a lot before. Respect the tournament that you're at, not the tournament that happens now. You know, championship games, your league tournament on Saturday. Selection Sunday is on Sunday. And that, to me, is the line has become so blurred it doesn't even exist anymore, and it's every game, you know, it's from Friday afternoons early semifinals. It's like, well, what does this mean for, you know, Nebraska Omaha? I don't care what it means for Nebraska Omaha. They lost last weekend to Bemidji. You know, like, I don't care what it means for RPI. They were out 2 weeks ago. You know, respect the game that you're watching. It just, to me, that's lost, and it disappoints me. Very, very disappointed.
Gladio, yeah, as per usual, Gladio, you and I are in complete agreement. I was on the radio last night during this great North Dakota-Denver game, and I got asked by more than one person, you know, well, what does it mean now if the Sioux have to go out to Manchester and play New Hampshire? And it's like, you know, honestly, we're right in the middle of this fantastic hockey game. Tomorrow morning, after I get back from church, I'll flip on the TV and I'll find out who's going where. But until then, let's worry about this.
Yeah, I saw a comment that said, oh, great job by these two teams for playing hard, even though their NCAA positions are guaranteed. Like, what? Like, come on. They're playing for a championship. These kids want to win. You know?
Yeah. Like,
I guess. I got to say, Glad, you would have been pleased with the CCHA then. I think because Miami had never won and Western Michigan hadn't won since I was one year old, the focus was really on the championship game.
Right.
And I agree, that was good, because in the past I've definitely seen exactly what you're talking about.
Now, in fairness to that opinion, though, and Joe, you're absolutely right. You're playing for a championship. You're playing for a trophy, all that.
You're going to get a ring? You're going to get a flag in your rink?
Yesterday in the second period, Jason Zucker got hurt. Got cross-checked. He got banged up a little bit. He's gone. Middle of the second period, all of a sudden, you know, probably the most dynamic young player in Denver's roster is off the ice. He later came back. He played very effectively the rest of the game. But I asked George Gwozdecki, at that point, knowing how banged up your team has been going into the NCAA tournament in previous years, do you think, you know, let's just shut him down for the rest of the game, let's not risk further injury? And he said exactly what you said. Hey, we're playing for a championship here.
Hey.
We're not necessarily worried about where we're going or what happens next week. We want to win tonight. We want to win this trophy.
Do you have that on tape or notes?
Yeah. I do have that somewhere.
Good. Send it to us, because that's our say what for first shift this week.
Okay.
Or stick salute.
I thought you were going to make it your ringtone.
It might be. I'll do it all. I'll put an MP3 auto load on my Twitter account. So every time
I thought I was the only one who had a George Gwozdecki ringtone.
I just picture him proclaiming.
Actually, we'll make that the stick salute and the say what. double features.
Well, I think we could probably find a tweet to throw in there, too. Because I think I saw a tweet, too, where it said, you know, somebody was like, you wonder if they want to be expending all this energy when,
yeah,
you know, they got to play. When they got to play next weekend. And it's insane. It's just absolutely insane that, you know, there'll be time for that later. Just enjoy this now.
Yeah. And here's where the rant comes in. People have a lot of information about the NCAA tournament selection. They have it all year. The problem is that they have it all year.
Right.
It's a computer program.
It makes sense this morning. That's it. So it's not that, say, oh, Cornell won, so RPI was out. Or, you know, Miami lost, so this team got sent to this region. That's not what it's about. Those decisions are made based on the data at the end of the year. It's the whole reason. You know, it's not that Cornell won wise, you know, Cornell won, so RPI is out. No. RPI is in ahead of Dartmouth because RPI won those two games, and they had a better record against good teams. You know, those kinds of things are to be looked at today. It's not something we should investigate throughout the year. It should be like Christmas morning. You know, keep the present wrapped, and then say, okay, here's the decisions we made. Here's why we picked CC over BU. You know, here's why we, you know, still got Rensselaer in here, because, you know, even though they lost in their league tournament. You know, here's why we thought Union was maybe ranked, you know, in this part of the ladder than, say, this part of the ladder. You know, that to me is the problem. It's the concept of the thing shifting. There's no such thing as a pairwise shift. The pairwise is meant for today. It's meant for the end.
Yeah.
You know, it's the whole year in encapsulated and evaluated on a bunch of criteria. So to look at it, you're just making it worse for yourself, you know? And so much of that metric is winning percentage. So here's the deal. Cheer for your team to win, and then there you go. You'll be in the tournament.
Right.
So there you go. There's my rant. There's no such that's what I kept coming back to. There's no such thing as a pairwise shift. There's no such thing.
I pride myself on the fact that in all of my years of writing, I don't think I've ever used the word bracket integrity in anything I've written.
I have, but only when putting up shelves.
If I have, it's done so mockingly.
And if you have not read Buss's excellent pieces on Hanging Shelves, see those in
I wrote
yourself journals.
What Time Life.
Blog?
Time Life books.
Ladies' Home Journal.
Knickknacks, curios, and wall shelves.
Wall treatments.
Wall treatments, yes.
Bric-a-brac.
James, anything you have you want to get off your chest?
I'm agreeing with everything you said. You know, I'm a numbers guy. I work in Excel and with financial models all day long, and I can tell you this. It's a computer program, and it tells you on the last day, and the data from the day before, the data from a week before, the data from a month before, I can assure you it doesn't mean anything. There's no NCAA basketball tournament. Oh, how'd you do in the last 10 games? Or, you know, what happened here? You beat this team early in the year, and we thought they were good, but they're not really. There's none of it. You know, you're either a team under consideration or you're not. You either have a better winning percentage or you don't. You either won your head-to-head games against this team, or I'm agreeing with you. You've got me all worked up now.
Now we worked you up into agreement. That's good. Yes. Jess, we want to go back to WCHA, something we touched on earlier.
Oh, I don't like talking about the WCHA much.
You're one of the
ones from. Okay, we can. Well, I don't like talking about North Dakota. I know I'm rare there too. Anyway, no, we mentioned Evan Trupp earlier, and I was lucky enough to witness this in person. And
lucky enough?
Much like the Mike Legg goal scored for Michigan, 15 years ago or so, it was one of those things where you saw it happen, and then you went, wait a minute, what just happened? Interesting play, to say the least. What's your thought, guys? You've seen the video.
No, describe it, I guess.
Okay.
Since we don't have video podcasts.
Coming up.
and that's for the benefit of our listeners and viewers.
And our listeners are lucky, lucky folk right there. Coming up ice, North Dakota's playing Colorado College. Evan Trupp, who has been an inch A to Z honoree in the past and a great player and a fun player. Puck is kind of up on end at the far blue line, and Trupp picks it up with the blade of his stick, foot and a half or so off the ice, and carries the puck 100 feet into the offensive zone and then flings it on net. The whole time with the puck in midair, a foot or two off the ice, sometimes with one hand on his stick, sometimes with two, fighting off a Tiger's check the whole time while doing this.
Yeah, not really.
A little bit, and manages to get a shot on goal out of the thing. And crowd went crazy. I know we don't talk about the crowd, but they did. And neat moment. Got some fun reaction from players afterwards saying, yeah, he does stuff like that all the time in practice. It was nothing new for us. And interesting moment, to say the least. Didn't wind up factoring in the final result of the game, but something
else.
Well,
so you saw it, right?
Yeah, I saw it.
What did you think?
I don't know. I guess if it was the and one tour, everybody would have come running out of the stands at that point, and it would have been over.
That's a podcast first, ladies and gentlemen.
Skip to my Lou.
Breaking guys' legs at the Rucker.
the dirt bowl.
Heaven is a playground.
I was wondering what he was doing, and then when I kind of figured out what he was doing, I was wondering why he was doing it. And I mean, it kind of ended there. I didn't really give it much thought. I didn't really say, hey, this was cool, or hey, that was unnecessary, or anything like that. I guess I took after the whole thing had played out, and obviously it didn't last much more than about 5 or so seconds. I sort of took the Paul Braun approach to it and said, and play continues in the Tiger end.
A Paul Braun reference. Wow.
Yes.
Play continues.
It was
that's good. You're neutral. Just okay. That was something. And then,
it was, yeah.
You weren't impressed or nor outraged.
Well, it was like, it was kind of like a three-quarter court shot in basketball that hits the rim.
That's a pretty good analogy.
You know, wow, that was close. Let's go get popcorn.
Okay, now, everyone...
I was just thinking what a guy like Jack Johnson or Chris Frank, who used to play at Western Michigan, would have done to somebody who did that.
Yeah. Now, everybody put on your seatbelts and helmets, because I'm going to be a little bit of a contrarian. Who, me? Yeah. When I saw it, I thought of Ryan Dingle.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I forgot about that one.
Like, he's in the Frozen Four. They're blowing out CC, I think, right?
Yes.
And, you know, he does the old, shootout move thing that you see relatively frequently on, you know, YouTube and other highlights, where you carry the puck on the blade of your stick and flip it around almost like a lacrosse, you know, ball and a lacrosse stick. But I'm just sitting there and I'm like, okay. Now, here's another one. I'm going to, refer to a movie, which I've actually seen, so it's another thing.
So it's one of three.
Yeah.
You watched the NFL films over the weekend?
No. But, like, Tin Cup, you know, they got the guy who's kind of a knucklehead, and the Kevin Costner character, and he breaks all his clubs, and he says that, you know, the touring pro, the... Don Johnson character goes, yeah, I shot even par on the backside with just a 7-iron. And the pro goes, well, why? and that's what I'm kind of looking. I'm like watching this Trump thing. You going on the ice, and I'm like, okay, why? Like, sure, you can do it, but why would you do it? And that's kind of where I stood on the whole thing. I just, I don't know, respect the game. I watched too much Coach's Corner when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Kids.
But how about this? How about this idea? Does that maybe start a trend? Does that become a new way of advancing the puck under certain situations?
No way. No way.
You know, I mean, if anybody watches soccer, there's this goofy move where you can carry the ball like on the back of your neck if you're really good. 10 years ago, that would have been...
How often have you seen it?
I don't know. I don't watch soccer.
Well, never, because
I watch soccer, and I can assure you, I don't see that in the game.
Okay,
never, you know, because it doesn't work.
I think if somebody was doing that and focused on holding the stick, you know, holding the puck on their stick in midair like that, they're going to get laid out at some point.
Yeah,
and that's going
to it's too easy to check. You have got better control of the puck on the ice, and you've got more options. Like you can make a pass, you can drop it, you can dump it, you can chip it. You know, once you're in a vulnerable position like that, you know, even if you turn your head too fast, you know, you could lose that thing. And then what do your wingers do? How do they respond?
Well, and that's what I was getting at with my Jack Johnson and Chris Frank comment. Like, it's just going to piss off the other team, and yeah, somebody's going to take a bite of you because you have to be so focused on doing it.
Yeah, you better wear a mouth guard if you're going
to
try that.
That's what the winger said, by the way. Fratton said, we had no idea what to do. Do we cut to the net? Do we pull up?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so it really did kind of throw off.
You can't
the
get a good pass.
On
it's not going to be flat. you can never. The only result of that play could be a shot on goal.
I was going to say you got a Marian Hossa hit out of midair. Yeah. You guys ever
and,
see
and
that?
And shooting the puck, your options are pretty limited when you're carrying it that way too, because you can't go very high before it becomes a high stick.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Just why? That was feeling like, okay, why?
So. Yeah, I didn't give it much. I didn't give it that much thought, but that's
plus
the...
You win this round.
we didn't give it much thought, except we just spent 6 minutes talking about it.
But that's, you know, once you brought up, it's kind of
I would have been surprised if Was there any implication from North Dakota's bench? I mean, did he sit a shift or anything?
No.
Oh, jeez.
No, it received positive reviews from the North Dakota folks I talked to afterwards. Now, keep in mind, that was after a win.
Well, yeah, but you go back to the Dingle play in Columbus, and
he sat the rest of the period, I think.
Well, and who was the captain at the time?
Was it your world guy, Jess?
No, it was Latch. Was it Latch?
Yeah, I think it was Latch or Skinner, maybe?
Anyways, whoever the captain was in the post game, somebody asked him about it, and he said, yeah, that's not something we really encourage around here.
That's right.
So, yeah. You know, it's fine. Yeah, it happened, and yeah. I don't know. It's like it's like doing donuts in the parking lot, in an empty parking lot.
I wonder if we'll get accused of being anti-North Dakota for this stance.
Yeah, we will.
Yes, we will.
It's okay.
We've learned that.
I'm pretty sure if we said it was the greatest thing that ever happened, we'd be accused of being anti-North Dakota.
Good point. 05 Denver roster, your captain is Matt Latch. And a guy named...
Go ahead.
And a guy named Jeff Pockovich had 120 pims in a college hockey season.
That's pretty impressive.
That's good work. 48 minors. Wow. 48 minor penalties in 43 games. No, I'm sorry. That's not... That's 48 total penalties. 48 over 120. So probably one minor penalty per game average.
Is that a hockey double-double, a college hockey double-double? 50 minors and 100 pims?
Maybe.
That would be impressive.
And I wonder if he can hear us because he has a championship ring in his ear.
Who's that?
The freshman that year. He got a ring.
Right. According to Wikipedia, he's currently playing for the Las Vegas Wranglers of the ECHL.
Okay. All right. Let's put a wrap on this. We're over an hour and a half, I'm sure. Thanks for bearing with us.
The lead.
And, you can go back to your regular, normal lives now. Any last call, shout-outs, anything?
Yes.
Got one.
Anybody else?
Go ahead.
Congratulations to the NCAA Division III men's basketball champions, University of St. Thomas Tommies.
How do you like that? A proud undergraduate alum, Mike Idlebis, says, I guess I got to go get a T-shirt when we're at the Frozen.
Yeah.
There you go.
Or when we're going to Plums.
Yes.
So, yeah, they beat some team from the East. I don't know who it was. I just saw it.
You certainly are from the West.
Yes.
Since we're offering congratulations, let me throw a quick shout-out to the University of Wisconsin women's hockey team. National champs for the fourth time in 6 years. Nice little run for former Badger and Olympic star Mark Johnson at the helm of that program.
Okay. James, you better come up with something.
Congratulations to Nebraska Omaha's wrestling team for winning a national title.
Time plus tragedy.
And turn out the lights. The party's over.
Yeah, that's a problem. I thought you were going to shout out your Wolverines basketball team.
They did play a heck of a game today.
Yeah, they did.
They did.
Come on. This isn't a Michigan thing. This is a we're not talking NCAA college basketball tournament, are we?
Well, it was on in the afternoon, and I just happened to tune in.
All right.
Hey, it wasn't. I didn't bring it up.
I know.
I didn't want to watch Matt Cook try to sever somebody's head off their body again.
I got one for you, Gladdy.
So I tuned in.
Congrats to Chris Campoli, game-winning goal for the Blackhawks.
My Islanders.
First goal since coming to Chicago, and a big one.
There you go. I did see a Matt Molson Islanders jersey tee in the crowd at Atlantic City, among the Cornell faithful, of course. So.
Wow. All right, Gladdy, aren't you going to shout out John Jones?
I can shout out John Jones, your UFC light heavyweight champion. he's good at beating people up for a profession. So I didn't get to see the fight, unfortunately, because I was working hard for the people of ECAC hockey and all the fans out there. So
college hockey.
All the people of college hockey, actually, yes, that is true. So.
Except for in the WCHA.
Well, I was working hard for them, too. I edited Jess's wonderful content.
That's hard work.
You have no idea.
Actually, I'm the only one who has any idea, because I know what it looks like when I send it to you.
That is true. That is true. We're going to talk about verb tense after the podcast. Let's wrap it up.
We don't want to make that part of the deterioration.
Yeah.
It just reminded me of when I was in college at the Daily.
They put
up a giant sign, somebody in like enormous letters with the whole "it's the, you know, Michigan." What is it? Yeah, Michigan it's and Wolverines there.
Yep.
Just somebody finally just got fed up and put a huge sign up on the wall.
You didn't put it up?
I did not.
Oh.
In the summer, we're going to start doing a weekly grammar podcast. It'll be a lot of fun.
And shelving.
Yeah, tune in.
On weeks we don't trackle.
We trackle different stuff in the summer.
Home improvement tips and grammar.
Semicolon has made a huge move on the big board. And now we've hit our deterioration and delirium.
Oh, don't get me started on apostrophes.
This grammar tip is brought to you by Campus Pizza and Pasta.
All right.
Gladdy, did you hear a recruit for 2014 for Michigan, ate a hamburger at McDonald's rather than Burger King, and so Michigan's apparently going to play in, Tampa instead of Tulsa in 2017.
Oh. I did see a college basketball writer note on, I guess it would have been Friday afternoon, he goes, going to cover Michigan and Tennessee. Feels like I'm at the Outback Bowl.
Oh, God.
Okay, deterioration has hit its peak, so we'll get out of here by now. Are we ready, Bus?
Yes, I've notified the affiliates.
Okay, good. So, for James V. Dowd and Jess Myers and Mike Idlebus, this is Joe Gladyszewski. Thanks for listening to the Inch Podcast.